There has been so much misinformation put out from some of these crazy Karens.
Blah, blah, blah. Excuse me.
We have the mother. This is obviously the missing mother. And we have the child. And they just poof, disappeared.
It was how he was not only going to kill me, but how he was going to kill my husband.
And the race was on.
You are listening to The Crime Files with hosts Philip Clown and Caroline Gould.
Good morning. It is a good Wednesday, overcast morning. And I am in the studio today with a special guest. We have Philip, who is on a little bit of a medical emergency for a while. So I am excited to have my guest with me. Many of you have heard us talk about her before. She's been a part of helping out our team in all missing person cases and beyond. Oh goodness, many years now, I think. I don't even know how many years, but I'm excited you're here. This is Tracy Sargent.
Well, thank you, Caroline. It's great to be here, and I'm actually in your neck of the woods.
Yes, we're from our studio today. And I'm glad you're here. You've been here before. I think one other time where we went, traveled for a couple cases.
Yes.
I think in Lumberton, you helped us out up there.
That's correct. And back again. And actually, the searches that we've been doing is just right around the corner from your office. And we arrived here Monday evening, and we did a lot of searching yesterday. And just to give the listeners some background about myself.
Yeah, tell us all about you.
So most people are familiar with me with the search dogs. I have dogs that are specifically trained to find missing persons, both dead and alive. I currently have two dogs. One is a German Shepherd. His name is Draco. And the other one is a Belgian Malinois. His name is Taz. And I also specialize, I have a doctorate degree in psychology and focus on criminal profiling, behavioral analysis, victimology, because over the years we've seen just the behavioral of, all right, when we're looking for missing persons, what are they going to do? If a bad guy gets rid of somebody or tries to kidnap or dispose of the body, what are they going to do? So combining and complementing the educational part and the behavioral analysis has really helped over the years, and tying those two in together. And I was invited by your team on a case that y'all been working on for some time now to come over from Georgia. That's where I currently live. And I drove over to Texas and helping you with this particular case.
Yeah, so this is the first case that you have been really putting your doctorate in psychology for the behavioral analysis aspect of that of this case. I mean, we sent you some interviews, you did your behavior analysis on some of them, and that factored into places of searching just in general in this case.
That's correct, Caroline. So just to give the listeners a little bit of kind of 101. So regardless of what case it is, mm-hmm. and let's just talk for, you know, listener's sake, these are missing person cases and
right.
Not bad guys or
yes.
Fugitives and things like that. So this is a quote missing persons narrative. So regardless of, let's say, if it's an adult, a child, Alzheimer's, whatever the circumstances of why they're missing, we always look at it from the perspective of what we call high probable areas, secondary areas, and then ROW, rest of world. So high probable areas are most often is where the last known point or point last seen.
Mm-hmm.
And we generally, if you talk about like a pinpoint, let's say like a pebble that you drop in a pool of water, that pebble is like the starting point. Our last, last known point or last seen point of the individual we're looking for. And then we expand out. It's like the ripple effect. So the primary high priority areas and then secondary areas. And then we're like, all right, let's check the rest of the world. That being said, there is a method to the madness, so to speak, on the areas that we search, and this case is no different. We look at specific areas that are tied to the missing person, either directly or indirectly.
Right.
And when we did the behavioral analysis, it was looking at, again, where this person may have gone, why they were there, why this area is tied to it, but also how to interview individuals that may be involved in this. Because regardless of who individuals are and their experience and background, we all have preferences, we all have fears, we all have needs, and we all have certain behaviors. And looking at people do certain things for certain reasons, and it could be good or bad. I'm not saying that, you know, if somebody says something or does something, they're automatically guilty, and that's not it at all.
Yeah, definitely not.
It's more about when looking at you, Caroline, you know, your behavior, your body language, how you respond to certain things that I say. It's like, oh, that's important to her.
Mm-hmm.
That's of interest to her. So it's important from an interview perspective to say, okay, let's kind of dive into that a little bit more. So it's really interesting, not only from that behavioral analysis, body language, what we call sensory preferences,
mm-hmm.
The psychology of all of that. And then, of course, from the perspective of, and I'm not saying this is one of those cases, but other cases I've worked, it's criminal profiling. Okay, why did this person do this? What did they do? Why did they go to that area? What are they going to do next?
Right.
Why are they answering these questions this way? What are they hiding? What are they minimizing?
Mm-hmm.
What are they trying to deflect? So all of those things, it's really fascinating. And when I watch these criminal shows or even listen to other podcasts and your podcast, I really look at it probably from a different perspective than other people.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, over the years, having to physically go out there and do these searches, I saw a pattern, so to speak, in certain groups, in certain even gender, what males and females, they do things differently.
Interesting. Common, right? I mean, males, females, they're going to act different, but it's interesting to see what those patterns are.
Yeah, it's really interesting. When I was going through my doctorate degree, most often people will do their doctorate degree and then go through that process and then go out to the real world and test it.
Mm-hmm.
In my situation, I had been doing this for so many years, I saw these different behaviors and these different psychological dynamics. So it was kind of in reverse. So I wanted to see if the actual research actually tied in and was consistent with what I saw in the real world. And in fact, it does.
It does.
So let's say, for example, if somebody calls me law enforcement or investigator and says, hey, we have this, this, and this, I'll ask, all right, who are the demographics? What is the gender? What is what you think might be the motive and this and that? And I can tell them, all right, check here, but you don't need to check there.
Uh-huh.
Because it just doesn't happen. The research has shown it. Real world has shown it. And it really narrows down the area, because that's the key in the case that I'm working right now with you guys and all the cases. No matter what kind of resources, and this really was a motivation for me in tying all of this together. You can spend millions of dollars looking for one person. Let's say Gabby DeVito is a good case. She mm-hmm. is a nationwide, you know, high profile case.
Yep.
A lot of resources there to find her. And then you have other cases, unfortunately, they have little or no media attention, very little resources for whatever reason. But there's one commonality between those two, and that is, if you're not looking in the right area, you'll never find them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I put all of this together from the psychological perspective of it, the behavioral analysis, and then certain resources. In my case, it would be the dogs, investigations, and putting all that together to determine where do we need to search so we can find some answers, find the person, find evidence, and move this case forward.
Yeah. So the case that we were working on yesterday, it's our local missing person case here in Southeast Texas. We have a couple, but this one specifically is from Bridge City, Texas. His name is Alexander Stewart, James. He went by Bo James. And he was last seen in January or February of 2022. I think we've narrowed it down to the second week of January in 2022. This is a case where we really don't have
a whole lot to go off of from the beginning. We don't have, we really just have his last known location, according to witnesses that saw him. So that's made it, well, for me, that's made it a little bit more difficult, because we don't have a whole lot of tips that came in initially. But from your perspective, does that help as far as like when you search for missing persons? Like you said, you always kind of go to where they're last known located. But what's your experience in, I guess, in the searches, what's your experience of having a lot of tips at first and then not having a lot of tips at first?
So I think what's important, Caroline, let me back up just a little for the listeners. The reality is this. When you look at the vulnerability of someone that is missing, females are at the top for obvious reasons. Males are a lower probability or lower priority of safety. Not to say that Beau and any other the males out there that are missing, they're just as important to find and to put, you know, as many resources as possible to locate Beau. With that said, you're looking at a 36-year-old male when he disappeared 2 years ago. He's 38 now.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an adult male. He's 36 years old. He has been known to, so to speak, go off-grid by his own choice. He is physically healthy. He's mobile. He's capable of taking care of himself. So from the radar perspective of safety and vulnerability and concern, he is on the lower level. People can disappear on their own accord, and there's no law against that.
Right.
So if he has decided to walk away from his life, that's his choice. It makes it much, much more difficult. When you compare that to, let's say, a 13-year-old girl, that's a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
In Beau's case, it's a very challenging situation because all of the things that I just mentioned. In addition, from what I understand and what I've read in the case files, he is a person that has chosen to be really off-grid. No social media, very limited text, you know, phone, you know, activity.
Yeah, he didn't have a smartphone.
Yeah.
Wasn't big on credit cards. I don't even think he had a credit card.
Yeah.
He usually dealt with cash.
Yeah. So in Beau's case, it's a little bit unusual in this day and age to be so off-grid. So that adds to the challenge of it. But the approach is still the same in that we look at high probable areas first, which you mentioned his last known point or where he was last known to live and the last known point where he was seen. So we started there and then we expand out. And mm-hmm. that's what we did yesterday. We identified 8 areas prior to coming here. You and I worked together on that to identify the areas and to really... you know, check all the boxes, so to speak, while we were here with the dogs, instead of just coming here for one or two, we wanted to reach out far and wide.
Mm-hmm. Make sure we covered a lot of ground.
Absolutely, because I approach these cases as doing more than maybe what is needed. And that's the way I approach it. I'd rather do too much than not enough.
Than not enough. And these 8 areas of where we searched, there's a lot of rumor and conjecture out there right now about the 8 areas and where we were seen and things of that nature. But all the areas that were searched were garnered by either tips that had come in or last known location, places that we knew he would go to or frequent, you know, homes that he had lived at prior that he was familiar with. So those are how we located and narrowed down the 8 search areas from yesterday.
That's correct. Yes.
So we covered a lot of ground, really.
We did. And I will say that, you know, there's so many resources out there, but there's resources that are better used at certain times in an investigation.
Right.
When you have a case like this, I know you have put Beau on a number of sites. So if he does show up somewhere else, Hopefully that will alert you and the other officials that mm-hmm. he's active, whether it's with a credit card or social security number or whatever it might be, which is great. So we have that active, passive type of, you know, alert system. But at the same time, you have somebody that's missing for 2 years. The complication with Bo is that there's no definitive, and I want to emphasize this to the listeners, there's nothing out there to say if he's dead or alive.
Right.
And that complicates it even more. Ironically, yes. If we had something obvious that says, yes, he's absolutely alive, we go in one direction. If he's absolutely dead, we go in another direction.
Right.
In this case, we're having to go in both, you know, it's a two-way street. We have to cover both bases because we have no definitive, clear answer if he's dead or alive.
Yes. So really what we do know is he was last seen at the home he was living in. Outside, ready to cut down some tree limbs that were overgrown or had become dead. I think it was, you know, winter time, so he was probably going to cut down some of those trees and shape things up. He does have a son who is younger, so we know that, that he has not spoken to since the disappearance. There was some conjecture on whether he walked away, you know, on his own accord or not. And so that kind of factored into when he was the date of, quote, a missing date, right? So with children and others, we've noticed, like, specific, like in the missing children cases we have, let's say Dior Kuntz, like we have specific dates that they went missing. With Bo, we have a time frame. We know what day, well, we know what week he was last seen in. But we don't have a specific date. And that also factors into how this is so much more complicated.
Absolutely. And you bring up an excellent point. Regardless of why somebody is gone, whether for you know, somebody walks away, they just want to start a new life somewhere, or other reasons, time is always of the factor. In the beginning, time is critical and plays a huge factor of being able to find evidence or find information or find the person and all of that. As time goes on, it really hampers the investigation. So you now have 2 years later, Bo has not been seen or heard from. And, you know, that just complicates it even more. And again, all the other factors that we mentioned. So, what we did yesterday, we utilized two dogs, my two dogs that I had mentioned earlier. And one of the things I want to share with the listeners is this. When we speak with investigators or law enforcement or even the family or whatever, it's like, I can only promise you one thing today and one thing only. And that is, at the end of the day, we'll know more at the beginning. Mm-hmm. We may not find anything. We might find everything. There's no way of knowing that. But the one thing that these dogs do is that they tell us two things always. They tell us where something is and where something isn't. So in yesterday's case, we went to eight areas, and some of them were quite large, and we were able to identify, first of all, we don't know where Bo is, but we know where he's not.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually very typical. It's extremely rare. It does happen, but it's extremely rare that we go on a search and we get into the area and we immediately find the person. In this case, this is pretty typical. We will search many different areas looking for the person and not find anything at all, but it still gives us vital information. We can clear those, we can mark them off, and we move forward to, again, as I said earlier, we're never going to find the person if we don't look in the right area.
Right.
So now we know what areas we don't need to look in anymore, mm-hmm. and we can move forward. So the case is actually moving forward and moved, you know, a giant leap forward from yesterday's search efforts.
Yeah, there's a lot of conjecture out there right now about those search efforts and where, you know, things that were supposedly collected and things that were seen and done. And while we're not going to go into details about those, I mean, we can confidently say that he's not, you know, in the property in the wooded areas behind where he was last seen. We're pretty confident on that. And what's the term you use?
Clear.
Clear. Mm-hmm. you know, another popular place where we actually have more than one missing person. And we've had a lot of tips for both of these missing person cases in the same area. We can confidently say that we have checked Lake Drive down to Bailey. Well, so Lake Drive turns into Bailey's Road. And we went all the way down Bailey Road, all the way to Bailey's Fish Camp, which anyone around here in Southeast Texas knows that Bailey's Fish Camp is very popular. People go crabbing there, fishing there. And you probably saw us out there if you were there yesterday. But we can confidently say there is nothing and no one, Bo James or Joseph Guthier, in that area. So, and I don't think any search has ever been done on that road with a cadaver dog.
Yeah, and you bring up an interesting point on that. It's only happened once, and all the years I've been doing this where we're searching for one person and find somebody else, and that was something that really kind of piqued my interest is when we were on Bailey's Road searching down there, how isolated it is, the high grass, the isolation of it, the privacy of it, that, good gracious, we could find somebody else out here other than who we're looking for.
Right.
And I do think it's important for listeners to also know when we talk about these dogs, most people know them as cadaver dogs, but technically they're known as HRD dogs, which is human remains detection dogs. And that's an important distinction because it's the full spectrum of human remains, from a full-size body to skeleton to everything in between. And that includes different body fluids, blood, cadaver. And with all due respect for the listeners, you know, it could be something such as if we go into a home, one of the questions I ask, do you have menstruating females that live in this home? Because that's blood. The dogs will respond to that. And if you have males, sexually active males, semen is also human remains to a dog. So all of that said, when we search these areas, when the dog alerts, what we call alert, that means they are indicating to me that they are detecting human remains scent in this area. And that's key. These dogs, whether it's a bomb dog, drug dog, or a cadaver dog, these dogs don't find bodies, bombs, and drugs. They find scent. Mm-hmm. And that's very important for the listeners to understand that. So when these dogs are searching, they're looking for that scent. They alert, and then that's when, quote, the human part of the team and the investigative puzzle steps in and says, all right, why did these dogs alert here? Is it tied to the case? Is it have anything to do with this missing person? What's going on here? And let me tell you about a real-world search we did, not in Texas. It was in another state, and this happened a couple of years ago. This young woman, she disappeared, and I was called by the state and local officials, so we searched inside this home. The dogs alerted in four places. They went to the bathroom. They alerted into the garbage can. The living room, they went to the couch, alerted there, and into the fireplace, and then we went outside, and they alerted at a fire pit. So when we went back, I told the officials, based upon the dog's response, this warrants further investigation. It is the investigator and law enforcement's perspective and call and responsibility to decide what they do or don't do with that. We can't tell them, you know, short of there's a body there or body parts, but if it's not something that's obvious, and in this case it was not, I will advise them this warrants further investigation. And then they come in, and law enforcement is great about doing these things and their due diligence. And I will say they did that yesterday as well. They followed through with their due diligence and did a great job with that. In this other case in another state, we went to the bathroom. There were used tampons. Okay, we can mark that off.
Right.
Went to the couch, and they did some luminol and found some blood. And when we looked up at the ceiling right above the couch, there was blood there. Went to the fireplace, and there was just a small little whatever that had been burned. But they were looking there, and it looked suspicious. Same thing as the fire pit. What we found out later on, this woman was asleep on the couch, and it was a lover or ex-lover or whatever boyfriend situation. She was asleep on the couch. He put a pillow over her head and shot her in the head. So that's where you get the blood from the couch and up on the ceiling. He burned the pillow in the fireplace.
Oh, wow.
The dogs alerted to that. And then he took her clothes off and burned, and a tarp or a blanket that he carried the body off of, and then burned her bloody clothes and the bloody blanket in the fire pit in the backyard. So that's a great example. The dogs alerted in four places. One place had nothing to do with criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't tied. I mean, it was tied to the victim, but it had nothing to do with criminal. But the other three were. That's a perfect example of that. So I think it's important to note that when these dogs alert, it does not automatically mean a crime happened and somebody's guilty and they should be charged with murder and all that. That's not it at all. They simply tell us, hey, I'm smelling human remains scent here, and we step in and figure out why.
Right. So yesterday, you know, in the Bo James case, like I said, we've seen a lot of this morning. I think we've woken up and seen a lot of conjecture, a lot of things on social media, a lot of people saying things were, taken as samples and stuff like that. So just to clear up on our end and what we did, you know, those eight search areas, the dogs did alert to a couple of specific areas that we're not going to go into detail about. Like you said already, police were brought in. They did their due diligence. They did what we call the follow through. This is where the investigative part comes in, and they did what they needed to do, to rule out certain things. And so that was all effectively done in this case yesterday. Wouldn't you say?
Yes, it was. It really worked the way it should and the way it needs to. The right resources were brought in. The due diligence was done. Everything was taken very seriously. Everything was done by the book. What I call the integrity of the case was intact and stayed intact. The chain of custody, whether it's notifying the officials at the right time, at the right place, they brought in the right sources. All of that worked like clockwork yesterday. It's a great example, and I work with law enforcement agencies literally all over the world, primarily here in the States and primarily in the South, just simply because that's where I live. So I've worked with law enforcement all over, and yesterday was a great example of it takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a village.
And as Philip would say, this is where, this is a great example of when, you know, private investigators that are on the civil side of anything, and then you have law enforcement that, you know, runs more of the criminal side of everything, when they coexist together and work on a case together and are, you know, cordial with one another, are respectful of each other's places and what, you know, we can bring to the table and what they bring to the table that we can't, and vice versa, what they can't, because there's things that they can do or that they can't do that we can do, and vice versa. There's things that we can't do that they can do. And I think when you, you know, really are able to work together, that's when you start moving cases along and you can really focus on what needs to happen next. And I can say that the detective and all the people we're working with in Bo James' case at Bridge City Police Department have really, you know, respected us and have accepted everything that we have provided them and vice versa along the way.
Absolutely. And that's so true. And it really is all about one goal, and that is supporting the family and finding answers.
Mm-hmm.
And combining these resources for that common goal, I see it all the time, and it really does take a village. It also, understandably, that working with these families, they are in just a really tough position, and they want answers, and right. They deserve answers. Mm-hmm. We did meet with Bo's parents this morning to give them an update and answered all their questions. And I will say this, working with families all these years from all different backgrounds, again, there's a commonality, regardless of why their loved one is missing and how all that happened. They simply want answers, and they know they want to know where their child is, dead or alive.
Right.
And Bo's parents are no different. They just want to know where their son is.
Yeah. And they, you know, their question is, what's next, right? Mm-hmm. That's, we get that question from all of our clients. What's next? What are you going to do next? And, you know, what comes next is further investigation, taking in more tips. I mean, just since our search yesterday, we have already garnered 2 tips in less than 12 hours. You know, if you know something, we want you to say something. And that's Philip's favorite line. If you know something, say something. Mm-hmm. And so in this case specifically, we really want anyone to come forward with any information. Even if you know Bo or knew Bo in, you know, years and years and years ago, we were searching somewhere yesterday and ran into a neighbor that he had lived down the street from, like, what, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe mm-hmm. even longer. And, you know, talking to him, and he gave us, you know, just information about things he knew. And, you know, that can tie in, no, whether you think it does or doesn't, the little bit of information that you might have could be helpful.
Absolutely. And I go back, it really does take a village. And it just takes that one phone call or that one email or a text or whatever it might be. And the bottom line is, Bo's parents want their son found, dead or alive.
Right.
And they just want him brought back home. And again, working with these families, that's all they want. Of course, they have a lot of questions, but the ultimate goal, they just simply want their child back or their loved one back home.
Yep. So that is the goal here.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And when we spoke with the parents this morning, I did advise them that we don't know where Bo is, but that doesn't mean we stop.
Right. We keep searching. We take the tips. We run those tips down. We, you know, look for even other places maybe that weren't on our initial search. But like you said, you know, we would rather search more than less, as far as like places and locations. And I think we can effectively say we did that yesterday.
Yes, because you and I, again, talked about, you know, in the last weeks of identifying these areas, but also we reviewed everything yesterday and even this morning's like, is there any other places that we can think of? So it was a very productive day. And also from the dog's perspective and a dog handler's perspective, your listeners might be curious to know this. We look at it, we talk about scent again. So there's a difference between scent conditions. So yesterday's search, fortunately, we had really good scent conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel a high degree of confidence that the areas that we searched, if scent was there, the dogs would have been able to pick it up. Comparing, let's say, in August, July timeframe here in Texas. Oh, my heavens.
It is miserable.
Yeah, the scent conditions, with no pun intended, it's dead.
Yeah.
So I would not have, you know, I could not say definitively, you know, we can clear these areas or they're cleared. It's like, no, we need to search them again. But the scent conditions were really good with the weather and the wind and just a lot of different variables. So we were very lucky and grateful and thankful for those good working scent conditions for the dogs yesterday. So that tells us, again, these areas have been checked, but also they've been cleared and we can move forward.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, there were, you know, trash found and things like that that mean nothing in the actual case. I mean, it's just everyday things you'll come across and you know, see, especially out there off of Bailey Road, where the water, and of course we've had hurricanes and we've had natural disasters that are going to push things up, you know, from the water and stuff. So,
yeah. And I think, as a note to everyone on Bailey's, as you mentioned, there's a lot of trash, there's a lot of debris. We did come across some bones. So if
right.
people, you know, go out there and like, oh my goodness, there's bones here. So we had the dogs check that, and I visually checked it as well. So based upon that, we can say definitively is what we call non-human. So there were some bones found on Bailey Road, but they have been determined to be non-human.
Right. And that's, I mean, animals are
We got a lot of wildlife around here.
Yes, absolutely. And
we were dodging gators yesterday.
Yeah, and a lot of feral cats too.
Yes, the cats. Oh my goodness, I did not realize there were that many feral cats down there.
Yeah, I didn't either. So, but they seem to be well taken care of with shelters and cat food and water and stuff. But
Adeline, my youngest, came home yesterday and she goes, "Mom, I got to hold a baby gator today." And she goes, "How was your day?" And I said, "Well, we were dodging gators today, honey. I'm glad you got to hold a baby one."
Yes. It was a very productive day, but we were definitely on high alert in many of the areas that we were in, especially when you're working dogs. I mean, the reality is a gator sees a dog as food. So,
right.
You know, those safety issues. But even with those challenges, we were able to cover a lot of ground.
Well, good. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here and being a part of our team and helping us and assisting in all of our searches. I know, as I mentioned at the beginning, Philip is out on a medical emergency, but he did get some quality, what do y'all call it?
Dog therapy
in the hospital last night. And tell us about that. Did he love it? Was Taz on him?
Yeah. So Taz is just a little, a little pocket of dynamite, I think, is probably the best description. He is a Malinois, which I think pretty much says it all. He is a very lovable guy.
Mm-hmm.
He has traveled around the country with me. He's about 50, 55 pounds, and he's visited hospitals and nursing homes and schools, and he's actually scheduled to go meet with a school group next week to show them about dogs and how all that works. So he is, a fan favorite. The hospital staff, when we got permission and approval for him to come in there, it's like, oh my gosh, yes. So the hospital staff were really excited. And Philip, bless his heart, anybody that's been in the hospital or even been sick in bed or can't move and you're there for a week, you know, you're about to go crazy. So even the, small gestures of a warm, fuzzy dog to pet and all of that, it's good for the body and good for the soul. So it was a great visit, not only for Philip, but for Taz to get those pets.
There. Yeah. Well, when I got up there last night, he was in such good spirits and a good mood. And I said, "I guess Taz was here." And he said, "Oh, yeah." And then I took my middle daughter, Ella Mae, and we brought him ice cream. And he goes, "I think this is the best day I've had in here." I said, "Well, we're over a weekend now, so let's get out of here."
Yes. So, I'm sorry to hear he's going through these challenges, but I have no doubt he's going to get through it with flying colors, and he's got some great doctors looking after him, and I wish him the best.
Well, we appreciate that, and for our listeners, he will be having another surgery, hopefully at the end of this week, so we are welcoming any prayers, good vibes, all the positive thoughts our way as our family, which all of you know we're a family business, so as our family is navigating this, I don't even know what to call this, but as we're navigating it. So, but we are going to wrap this up. Thank you so much for being a part of the Bo James case, helping us know where he's not and all the other things you've assisted in this case with us. I know our listeners will be excited to hear from you because you're often a question that we have. How's Trace? How's the dogs? And I think we even did an episode when after Chance had passed and let them know, he was such a good dog. Look, I'm getting emotional between my dad and Chance. I can't. This is just too much today.
It's I have to say, I've seen a lot of things and a lot of the worst in people and the best in people.
Mm-hmm.
But saying goodbye to a beloved team member and family member such as Chance is the hardest part of my job in my life.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet.
But when you have Taz and Draco to fill those shoes, it does help. And then to bring up the spirits of people and also to help these families, it does help as well to move forward.
Well, we love you for that. Will you please tell our listeners where they can find you if they want your services, if they want to reach out to you, if they have a missing person case and they, want your assistance? Where can they find you?
That's a great question. For the listeners, I actually got off social media because of some of the cases I'm working on. For example, I don't know if Caroline even knows this, but this might generate some interesting leads too. But they have reactivated the BTK serial killer case.
I had heard that.
Okay, so I'm
but not from you.
So okay,
you hadn't told me that, but okay. I did hear that through another grapevine.
Yeah, so I was selected, and there was a number of task force members that have been selected to be a part of this revamped BTK killer case, and then some other cases that I'm working on that I can't really talk about that for just a lot of reasons. I got off social media, so I can't be reached on social media. I would say probably the best way to get in touch with me, since here locally, is to reach out to you, Caroline.
Okay.
And then connecting us, and then we can see what we can do to help them.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a plan, Stan, and y'all all know how to get a hold of me. So I don't even have to put my information on there.
There you go.
But anyways, well, thank you again, Trace, for being here and for being with us the last couple of days. And, you know, we appreciate you and look forward to many more adventures.
Well, I appreciate everything that y'all do, and it does make a difference. And I just say to all the listeners, just be safe out there and be happy.
Yep. All right. Well, if you haven't already, make sure to follow us on Facebook at The Klein Files. You can also leave a review on any podcast platform, and we will see you next time. Bye.
The Klein Files. I'm in a grumpy mood.
Blah, blah, blah.
And you know what they say, assuming makes an ass of yourself.
My name's Philip Klein, and I'm a fixer. And I am.
It's a real damn thing.